is the Tom Hartman Program.
What a pile of news there is today. And I mean that in a kind of positive sense in some ways, and, well, kind of a spooky sense in others. Wall Street's, here's what we got for the lineup today. Wall Street's barons are causing homelessness. I did a deep dive into this yesterday afternoon. In fact, typically I'm done writing the next morning's the daily rant, for HartmanReport.com, before Rachel Maddow comes on the air. I get home around 1 and she comes on at 6 here Pacific time. But last night I was writing right into her show. I kept finding more and more and more stuff about how Wall Street is causing homelessness. We'll get to that in just a moment. Also, Donald Trump has announced a Sophie's Choice for the Republican Party. What are they going to do? In our second hour, oh, and also in the first hour, if teachers and nurses and cops don't believe in science, let's let them get fired. I mean, isn't that a good thing? I want to get into that in this hour. In the second hour, Sarah Kendzior is going to drop by. Is Merrick Garland a mafia state enabler? Really? Do you even want to talk like that? This is it's a pretty spooky topic, or weird topic, or actually troubling topic, I guess would be the correct word. And the deadly secret of the Black Flag Republicans, people who are openly declaring they're willing to kill their neighbors. We'll talk about that in the second hour of our program today. In our third hour, some just startling stuff now out of India about Amazon, and it seems to also reflect what's going on in the United States. How monopolies gobble up America. Can we break them up like Jimmy Carter did with Ma Bell? Actually, it was Richard Nixon who started that and created a renaissance for America. And finally, there appears to be a voting bill that Schumer and Joe Manchin agree on. We'll check that out. That'll be in the third hour of the program. So let me start with this rant that I wrote yesterday afternoon and finished up this morning. It's over at HartmanReport.com. It's our daily rant today. Wall Street's barons are causing homelessness. Can we stop them? And this is just absolutely astonishing. Zillow, you know, the big national real estate listing company, Zillow.com is their website. They funded an in-depth research study into the relationship between housing prices and homelessness, which is remarkable and remarkably socially responsible. And what they found is that whenever the cost of houses exceeds 32% of the median income in a neighborhood, you start seeing a rapid explosion of homelessness. In other words, when houses begin to cost more than 3 times the average wage, then homelessness starts to stalk neighborhoods. The median American income right now is $35,805. $36,000. So what they're saying is for the median neighborhood, if the house is costing more than 3 times that, which would be like what, $100,000, you're going to start seeing homelessness. And what we're finding, from what the Fed says, is that the median house right now is selling for $374,900. That was last year's numbers from the Fed. As Zillow reports, the rent burden already exceeds the 32% of median income threshold in 100 of the 386 markets included in this analysis. I tell the story of my dad back in 1956, or 57, I guess it was. I was 6 years old. He got a VA loan, which, again, we used to subsidize Americans buying homes. Now we're subsidizing giant corporations buying homes with tax breaks. But anyhow, he bought this house in South Lansing, Michigan for $13,000. Maybe it was 15. I'm pretty sure it was 13. Anyhow, it was in that neighborhood. And that was about twice what he made when he was working at, you know, a good union job at a tool and die shop. Obviously, the dollar was worth a lot more back in 1957. But back then, the median price of the single family home was 2.2 times the median American family income. It was about twice what people earned. That was the hot cost. And that's why people were able to live and pay their rent and pay their mortgage and have food for their kids and even put their kids through college, which also wasn't very expensive then, and afford health insurance or afford medical expenses. Because housing didn't, wasn't taking this giant bite out of us. Today, the Fed says the median house is selling for $374,000. And we're seeing this in part because, you know, there's more Americans and fewer houses. When my dad bought his house, there were 168 million people in the United States. Today, there's 330 million. And, you know, it's true that, you know, Reaganism has stopped the growth of wages while causing an explosion in the growth of everything else. But the main thing that's driving this is actually not, it started with foreign investment. There was this big wave of foreign investment in U.S. housing over the last 30 years, more or less. But the last decade has been a completely different thing. And it can track back to this study that Morgan Stanley did in 2011 that they published, saying that basically this is the great new investment opportunity. Buy up all the available housing in a middle-class neighborhood, turn it all into rentals. So basically, if somebody wants to live there, if it's a neighborhood that's got good schools, that was the principal magnet. If you got a neighborhood with good schools, buy up all the houses in that neighborhood and then rent them out to people. So people can no longer buy the houses. And what this does is it drives up the housing prices. They tell the story, there was a Wall Street Journal article about this, Meet Your New Landlord, Wall Street. They say, you know, on the first Tuesday of every month, this is in Atlanta, where the first Tuesday of every month is when they auction off homes that are in foreclosure. On the first Tuesday of each month, investors toted duffels stuffed with millions of dollars in cashier's checks made out in various denominations so they wouldn't have to interrupt their buying spree with trips to the bank. In this one suburb of Nashville that they documented in the Wall Street Journal, the vice mayor, Bruce Hall, says, you know, before the big companies came in, you could rent a three-bedroom, two-bath house for $1,000 a month. The average rent now, as a consequence of it, well, I just quote from the Wall Street Journal, quote, the average rent for 148 single-family homes in Spring Hill owned by the big four Wall Street investor landlords was about $1,773 a month. So rents have almost doubled. Ryan Desimer just published this new book, Underwater, How Our American Dream of Homeownership Has Become a Nightmare. And he tells the story of home buyers, you know, middle-class families who are trying to buy their first home. And they're going in and they're making offers on houses at asking price. You know, there's a house on the market for $150,000. They offer $150,000. And suddenly somebody comes in like minutes later and says, we'll make it $160,000 cash. And of course, the home buyers can't offer cash. They have to say, well, it's, you know, subject to approval of the bank, and the bank won't approve it until there's an inspection. And so it's going to take a month. And, you know, home sellers would much rather have cash than wait a month. So anyhow, they note that this guy, this one family, the Jacobs family, they were bewildered. They made an offer on a house. As I recall, it was around $90,000 house. They made an offer on it. And it was at asking. And then the seller came back and said, well, somebody just offered $10,000 more or a couple thousand dollars more, whatever it was. And so the Jacobs family upped their bid, and instantly the other bidder, and finally it just hit the point, it passed through $100,000. It hit the point where the Jacobs family said, we can't afford it anymore. And they backed out. And they were trying to figure out who was this aggressive bidder. It turns out it was Blackstone Group, which is an almost $1 trillion investment fund run out of New York City. It's a Wall Street investor group. In fact, it's the largest real estate investor in the world right now. And that week, at that time, they were buying $150 million worth of American houses every week, trying to spend over $10 billion. In 2018, according to the Wall Street Journal, corporations bought one out of every 10 homes sold in America. Desimer, in his book, he notes between 2006 and 2016, when the home ownership rate fell to its lowest level in 50 years, the numbers of renters grew by about a quarter. And again, you go back to this study by Zillow. You know, what Zillow found was that, quote, communities where people spend more than 32% of their income on rent can expect a more rapid increase in homelessness, number one. Number two, income growth has not kept pace with rents, leading to an affordability crunch with cascading effects that for people on the bottom economic rung increases the risk of homelessness. And number three, the areas, I'm reading from the study, The areas that are most vulnerable to rising rents, unaffordability, and poverty hold 15% of the U.S. population and 47% of people experiencing homelessness. It's measurable, it's predictable, and it's destroying what's left of the American working class, particularly minorities, and creating an absolute screaming explosion in homelessness. And this also is locking middle-class people out from being able to grow equity. Most of the wealth of most middle-class families, it's true of me, it's probably true of most people, is their home, their equity in their home. That's their biggest pile of money. And it increases over time faster than any other investment you can make, and relatively safely. But now you've got families who are being locked out of the market, locked out of the ability to buy a home, and then having to rent where you gain no equity over time, you don't gather wealth, and then the big corporations come in and start doubling the rents or increasing the rents, and pretty soon you've got this explosion of homelessness. When is America going to wake up? When are we going to do something about this? Back with more of the news of the day right after this break.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Trump just announced a Sophie's Choice for the Republican Party. I'll get to that in just a moment. And welcome back. Dennis in Aptos, California. Hey, Dennis, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
Well, I'm just wondering if some of these buyers of all these homes, these Wall Street guys, if they're not doing things like Vrbo and Airbnb with their purchases. A lot of individual people do that who are nowhere near as billionaires, just regular normal people.
Right.
But, this is just another way of getting in on the scam, turning it into a grift. And, that's why I don't like, I've rarely ever taken an Uber or a Lyft, only with other people, not myself. They're grifts. That's how I see them.
Well, what they did, what Uber did is they offered transportation at below cost for about 2 years, losing hundreds of millions of dollars in the process, perhaps billions of dollars, and drove all the taxis out of business. And then once the taxis were run out of business, I don't know if you noticed, but the cost of an Uber pretty much doubled, over the course of about 2 years, as I recall. I just noticed it because I was using them a lot, because I was traveling a lot, and in many places, you can't even find cabs anymore.
Yeah, exactly. They're around at airports.
Let me answer your question, Dennis, because I see a break coming in 2 minutes.
Sure.
What's happening is that these companies, these giant investment companies, they'll go into a community like the Spring Hill neighborhood in this suburb in Nashville, and buy hundreds of homes, and then they've got an economy of scale. They don't need Vrbo or Airbnb. They're doing all the management themselves. They'll create a local company. They'll hire a couple of local handymen. They go in and they remodel all these houses after they buy them. They put in identical appliances, identical everything in every house. And so the handy person, the fixer-uppers, all have, everything is standardized. So, when they go to fix a refrigerator, it's the same as the other 100 refrigerators. When they go to fix a stove, it's the same as the other 100 stoves. So they got the parts, in their little mini warehouse. And then they've got, this local company that they own that is doing management of these houses that, collects the rent and pays the bills and deals with complaints. And they can also buy insurance en masse. They instead of buying insurance for one house, they're buying insurance for, 5,000, 10,000 houses at a time. And so they're getting insanely low deals. And these are things that there's no possibility of a homeowner to compete with. It's just impossible. So that's how it's happening. What's happened is Airbnb and Vrbo are pretty much just what's left over for people who own a second home and want to make some money off it.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. I just had to wonder though that if that's one of the factors, why would you want to buy a bunch of houses? Because then you can turn around and you don't even have to have anybody living there for, you know, 6 months or a year or so. You just rent those places out on big holiday weekends.
They're doing it for two reasons.
Two or three times the money.
They're doing it for the same reasons that it works for the middle class. Number one, you have, you know, a regular income from it. For the middle class, it means you don't have to pay rent. You're paying a mortgage instead. Mm-hmm. And number two, that income is also, a chunk of that income is going into equity. You know, it is for the middle class. For these companies, they own these houses outright. They paid cash for them. But for the middle class, this is how we grow wealth. Dennis, thank you for the call. It's 21 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back. And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. A couple of two quick stories here I wanted to share with you and also, you know, put on the table for us to discuss. I'm on Donald Trump's email list, as you know. I've been talking about it for the better part of 6 years, and both me and Fred Flintstone now, and I think they're particularly targeting me. You know, I as Fred Flintstone, I gave $5 or maybe 15, I think it was $5 to Trump back in 2015 when he was in the primary, along with a bunch of other candidates, just to get on their email lists. As Fred Flintstone, but then about the middle of the Trump presidency, late 2018, early 2019, they were selling, Donald Trump's website was selling a Trump coloring book. And I just had to see this thing, and it was like $30, and so I bought one. And I parted with $30 of my money, gave it to Donald Trump, and ever since then, I am just like, I'm getting emails from Rudy Giuliani. I got one this morning from Rudy Giuliani. I get them from Newt Gingrich. I get them from Donald Trump. I get them. Yesterday, I got 7 fundraising emails just from Donald Trump and another 3 or 4 fundraising emails from people in Trump's circle. And one of the emails that I got from Donald Trump yesterday said, and I quote, "If we don't solve the presidential election fraud of 2020, which we have thoroughly and conclusively documented, Republicans will not be voting in 22 or 24. It is the single most important thing for Republicans to do." Now, what he's saying here is that the people who follow him will only vote for Republicans who want to end democracy. Let's be very clear about this. What he's talking about is saying elections don't matter. What the will of the popular vote, it turns out to be, does not matter. What matters is what the election board says or what the state says when our politicians get involved. They're setting up the theft of the 2022 and 24 elections, and they're doing it right in front of us. And now Trump is threatening the rest of the Republican Party, and there's not much of it left that hasn't turned Trumpy. But people like Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State in Georgia, who continues to say, you know, Joe Biden actually won the election down here in Georgia. He oversaw the election. And there's a Trumpy guy running against him, trying to primary him, and probably will succeed. And this is what Trump is saying. So the question is, you know, will Republican voters refuse to vote for non-Trumpy candidates in 2022 and 2024? I mean, is this the end of the Republican Party? I don't think Trump is bluffing here. I think this is a very real thing and a very real problem. Also, you've got, that's one piece of it. There's another quick story I wanted to just put on your dashboard, and you know, feel free to call in and share your thoughts on it. This was a Jeff Tiedrich quote yesterday, you know, one of his text messages or his tweets. He said, if teachers, I'm paraphrasing here, I don't have the tweet right in front of me, but basically what he said is, let's see, teachers who don't believe in science are resigning, cops who don't believe in public safety are resigning, and nurses who don't believe in science, in medical science, are resigning. How is that a bad thing? And I'm like, yeah, and let's add a few to that, you know, pilots who don't believe in public safety are resigning. How is that a bad thing? Right? What am I missing here? Why do we have to coddle and nurture and nurse these people along? Oh, you know, we're so sorry. Maybe you can get a religious exemption. We'll give you another month to think about it. Why? Do you really want teachers who don't believe in science? Nurses who don't believe in medicine? Cops who don't believe in public safety? Really? We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
As Tiedrich says, let them quit or get fired. I'm failing to see the downside to this. Right? Back with your calls after this. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. So let's try to crowdsource this thing. What can we do? Some countries, like Malaysia, have made it illegal for foreign buyers to own property in their countries. That deals with the foreign buyer problem, which was a large part of the increase in home prices over the last 20 years. But the last 10 or 11 years have seen this explosion in these giant Wall Street firms coming in and buying up houses. They gain this massive economy of scale. You know, if they own, like in the Spring Hill neighborhood in Nashville, these companies own 5% of all the houses. When they buy them, they go in and they put in their own appliances and their own, you know, refrigerators and washers. And I mean, they're spending an average of $25,000 a house when they buy these houses. And that way, they have their own repair service, and it's the same parts for the same stuff for every house. They have their own local rental management company so that they've got, you know, a law firm and everything to evict people and, you know, deal with renters and problems like that. They've got economies of scale that no individual homeowner can compete with, that Airbnb can't compete with. So do we ban, corporations from owning houses or owning more than a certain number of houses or owning more than a certain percentage of houses in any given city? Is that, I mean, you can do that with zoning. Is that the first step? Or on the other hand, do we flip it around and do like, you know, what happened in the 1950s when my dad bought his one and only house? He bought it in 1957 and literally died in it. He died in the living room of it. I was sitting next to him, you know, in his living room as he died, and in that house. And, you know, which was 2006, I mean, years later, right? He bought that house with a VA loan. He had been, you know, he'd volunteered for the draft during World War II and, you know, went off to Japan. And so he qualified for a Veterans Administration loan. We were subsidizing middle-income, middle-class people to buy houses. Do we go back to doing that? Do we start offering incentives to people to buy housing? I think, frankly, regulating the market is a stronger way to do it right now, because I mean, you know, by the point my dad made, I remember the 1980s when, during the Reagan administration, when mortgage, Louise and I bought a house in Atlanta during that time in 81 or maybe 82, and we were paying 13%. That was the mortgage rate. And my dad was telling me how the banks were calling him up and saying, hey, wouldn't you love to roll your loan over? Because he was paying 1.5% or something like that with this VA loan. And his house was almost completely paid off. And they wanted to get him into one of these 18% or 13%, you know, mortgages. But right now, home mortgages are, you know, running 2 to 3%. So I doubt that we could do much to help middle class people buy homes. What we need to do is deal with the affordability of them. Which will cause, you know, if we were to say, okay, corporate, you know, giant corporations can't buy housing any longer in the United States, or there's a limit on how much they can buy, or if city after city starts adopting this, you know, there is no progressive equivalent of ALEC, you know, that produces standardized legislation that everybody across the country can, you know, that every state can use. But if there were, that somebody, or if one city just does it, you know, Seattle or Portland or San Francisco or something, and just says, you know, we're going to cap How many single resident homes can be owned by other than human beings? We're going to cap that. If a city were to do that, it would level off housing prices for a while. It would stop the explosion of housing prices. It might even cause a slight sag in the housing market for a short time. The housing market will recover as wages go up. But that would be a good thing, I would think, because it would mean that housing would start becoming affordable again. So anyhow, we've a lot of stuff to talk about here. And let me pick up some of your phone calls. Gordon in Naperville, Illinois. Hey, Gordon, what's on your mind today?
Hi, good morning, Tom. I want to sort of tie together a couple of things that you've said here. A long time ago, you taught us that the Black Plague brought about the Renaissance and gave us trade unions.
Yeah, ironically, so, yes. Because it killed so many people and created a labor shortage, yes.
We're right. So what's happening now is that we're seeing that sort of in reverse. Poverty is power to the rich and powerful, okay?
Correct.
So this whole housing thing ties in with the abortion laws. The abortion laws aren't about controlling women. That's more the excuse to get them passed. It's more about creating poverty.
Well, that's the effect poverty that it has, or perpetuating poverty. Yeah, that's the effect of
perpetuating and creating poverty, which, instead of moving money downward, moves money upward.
Correct. Because poor people are always renting.
More power.
Right. And poor people are renting. They're not building equity. They don't own their properties. Yeah. Yeah.
Which gives the rich more power. The same thing with education. You keep people uneducated, they can't get the good jobs. It gives the rich people more power. It's all poverty is power to these people.
Yeah. Yeah. And so why would they?
You create.
In other words, if we were to say, okay, that's it, you can't continue to strip mine our neighborhoods, we're essentially taking away their profits and power, and turning over, and the effect of that would be to decrease poverty in America,
which they're going to fight because
poverty
takes
makes them
away
money.
The power.
Yeah,
if,
I get you.
The plague moved money and power away from the nobility.
Right.
Now you're seeing, whether you call it corporations or, you know, the uber wealthy or whatever, they're taking their power back by creating and perpetuating and enforcing poverty.
Yeah, no, I get it. Gordon, that's a brilliant analysis. Thank you for the call. Angel in Los Angeles. Hey, Angel, thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Hi, I love your show.
Thank you.
I'd like to comment that I believe there are many more countries that do disallow foreign ownership of their property. And I think France used to. I'm not sure what they do now. But I always thought America had until about 20 years ago. I was really shocked because it's the only rational way to run a country.
You would think. You would think. I mean, you've got billions and hundreds of billions of dollars, going into housing as a way of wealthy people in other countries, particularly China. That seems to be the major source of it. Chinese billionaires parking their money in American real estate because it's a safe long-term investment. Mm-hmm. It is going to go up over time. You'll have periodic, cyclical things like, the 2008 crash. But those are just buying opportunities from their point of view. I don't know about France. I know that a lot of countries had those restrictions. I lived in Germany in the 80s. We never got to the point of buying a house, but I don't recall, what the laws were at that time. But I know that there were countries in Europe that restricted foreign ownership. I think, though, that the European Union blew all that up. I could be wrong, but I think that, when they joined the EU, they had to, basically let other people buy houses, buy housing. I don't know, but it's a starting point. Angel, thank you for the call. Karen in Adrian, Michigan. Hey, Karen, what's on your mind?
Well, let me put these up. Yes, hi, Tom. So, buying housing is really out of my market right now. I've been looking at lower income housing. It's a huge crisis. Last year when I was trying to get a lower income apartment, I could see from week to week the prices of the rent going up.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to have good credit to get in these places too. So if you've ever had an eviction or you have poor credit from medical bills or from whatever, then you can't get in them into public housing.
Yeah, but you're not only can't buy, you can't even rent.
Right. Exactly. Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
But the kicker is, it used to be back in as late as 2008 that if companies got HUD money to help build their complexes, they had to reserve X number of units for how HUD recipients to get a place to live.
Right.
But somewhere along the line, they changed the whole subsidized housing Section 8 ruling. I don't know how, because I haven't been involved that much with it. But now there's no limit. They can kick everybody out if they want.
Yeah. I would guess that would have been one of the innovations that George W. Bush brought us. But you say 2008, he was president that year, that entire year. I don't know. But Karen, thank you for sharing that with us. I'm sorry to hear that you're being priced out of the market. Norma in Montgomery, Alabama. Hey, Norma, what's up?
Well, I've said this before, and I'll say it again. We need to stop foreign investment groups from buying residential property at all. If they want to come over here, they can lease property for business, but they should never be allowed to buy residential property. The house across from me belongs to a guy. He says, call him Scott. And he says he's from Taiwan, he speaks Cantonese, and when he first bought that house from foreclosure, he said that he wanted to buy 52 so he would get a check every week and he wouldn't have to work. He has a corporation behind him in Taiwan. And when he started gutting it, he knew nothing about code. And I had to get the board out here to stop him from what he was doing, because he was throwing the plaster from 1948 into the backyard and the dust was flying everywhere.
Oh, and it's got asbestos in it.
That's correct, and lead paint dust.
Yep.
And I had to go over there time after time, and here he is speaking Cantonese and his illegal help is Mexican speaking Spanish, and it's a dialect I don't speak. I don't know where he was from, but anyway, I finally just started drawing diagrams and trying to teach him. But downtown, our only historic high-rise building built 100 years ago now belongs to Japan. All of these car companies have come into Alabama and bought land, and they have gotten it with the caveat of no property tax forever.
Right. Yeah.
And huge this is hurting the economy. This has to stop. We need a federal law that no foreign investment group can buy a single square inch. 1 year, Saudi Arabia, about 10 years ago, bought 640,000-acre wheat field in Nebraska. They own most of the thoroughbred horse farms in Kentucky. They own farms in Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and Missouri for growing hay and alfalfa for the horses. As more and more land is sold to foreign investment groups or foreign rich people, there is less available for American citizens.
Right, and those prices go up.
Yes, and the prices go up. In fact, my son is trying to sell his house in Shelby County, north of Montgomery, up by Birmingham, and buy something closer down here to me, because, you know, I'm 71. And we have spent 5 days out hunting, and there is not a single for sale sign. I myself have received probably 24 phone calls over the past 6 months wanting people say, will you sell your house below market value? Will you sell your house at all?
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell them I'll take $500,000 for it, even though it's not anywhere near worth that, mm-hmm. because it was built in 1952. My dad was also VA. He built the house that we lived in 1955, and he built it for $16,000, and now today the house, when I sold it for $125,000.
Yeah, that's about what my dad's house is worth right now.
Yes, and so as prices continue to go up, it prices the average guy out of ever being able to buy a house, and they pay rent forever. The house across the street is $900 a month. One down the street where the old lady died, that one's $1,200 a month because it has a deck on the back and an extra bathroom.
Yeah.
But they keep doing this. They come in and they buy these houses up to where there's nothing left for regular guy. Regular Joe can't buy a house.
Right, and then in cities you see this explosion in housing prices. I think the median home price in Portland now is in the neighborhood of $500,000. I mean, that's mind-boggling.
And Los Angeles belongs to China now.
Yeah, it's incredible. Norma, thank you for the call, and thanks for all the detail. Appreciate it. 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
What do we do about that? What do we do about cops who don't want to get vaccinated? What do we do about nurses and teachers who don't believe in science? I say let them go. Let them go. And welcome back. Excuse me. Jim in Long Beach, California. Hey, Jim. Thanks for listening to KPFK. What's up?
Hey, Tom. Hey, where did they go? Where did these angry, fired people go? And I am totally sympathetic with all of the issues, but we have to prioritize passing the protection of the vote at a national level so that actually the next election is not the last election. Yeah. All of these issues are going to, all of these problems are going to be blamed on the administration. And if we don't focus on that one issue of getting, and I can't even figure out how to contribute to the people I want to win, because I never know if I'm being scammed or not.
Just go directly to their campaign website. That's okay. The way to do it, Jim.
Okay, so let me ask you or tell you one thing. If we don't prioritize passing that, we're going to lose, and it's all gonna, because it's going to be blamed. I guess I'm repeating myself, but I just wanted to make that point. You know, Buckminster Fuller said America is going to go down by greed and corruption.
Yeah, no, you said it well. And with regard to your initial question, assuming it was not rhetorical, you said, you know, what's going to happen to, or what are we going to do about the people who refuse to get vaccinated and are losing their jobs because they're cops or teachers or firefighters or whatever.
I'd like to add to that. They're going to balkanize. Their talk radio shows that I happen to across when I'm looking for the baseball game, I go to AM.
Sure.
These talk call radio shows.
Nothing wrong with listening to them.
What you hear is, what are we going to do? When are we going to use our guns?
I know.
When are we going to go black against our neighbors? When are we going to be? And these guys, you know, they get more stations than we do. And so these people that are fired are going to be more extreme than ever. And they're saying, balkanize, go to red states, get away from the blue people, go hang out with your own people.
One of the things I don't know that I would love to know is to what extent red states and blue states on the edges, you know, California and Mississippi, to what extent those states are hemorrhaging, losing citizens who are of a opposite political philosophy. How many Republicans are fleeing California and moving to Mississippi or Idaho? How many liberals in Mississippi and Idaho are moving to California? I doubt it's a huge number, but my point that I tried to make twice here, Jim, let me make this point. What happened, or you know, what do we do about these people who refuse to get vaccinated? My answer would be United Airlines. They have 67,000 employees. Yesterday, they terminated 232 people who refused to get vaccinated. 232 people out of 67,000 employees is absolutely nothing. There's all kinds of Sturm und Drang, all kinds of noise and storms and thunder and lightning and all, you know, around, oh my God, vaccine mandates, it's tyranny, it's Hitler all over. But when the rubber meets the road, when the deadline comes, people are getting vaccinated.
Well, we got to keep a focus on the vote. And so I get your point. It might be in a minority. Are you there?
Yeah, no, I am, and I don't disagree with you that we have to focus on the vote.
Okay,
and in fact,
really,
Schumer's bringing
really
that bill to the floor on Monday, and we'll talk about that later on in the program. But I'm with you, Jim. I'm absolutely with you. Jim, thank you for the call, and thanks for listening to KPFK. It's 52 minutes past the hour. I'll be back in 60 seconds with more of the Tom Hartman program, the place where despair is not an option, right after this. And welcome back. Nancy in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan. Hey, Nancy, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I have 2 points about the housing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm seeing in Royal Oak, Michigan, and I live in Oakland County. Their tax on non-owner occupied houses is 17 mils higher than if you live in the house.
Oh, that's interesting.
So
17,
that's 17 mils, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
So that drives up the rent, number one. And, of course, the government likes collecting this extra money.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've seen in Royal Oak is some really hideous apartment buildings, structures going up, you know, 20 feet from the curb and out on a busy street, and very undesirable new construction. But my second point is that we have a housing shortage, and the answer is to put up more affordable single-family homes.
Agreed.
And I've spoke to our government officials about it and heard how difficult it is, and of course it takes some federal money. But the way to cure a shortage in a competitive capitalist society is bring more into the market. That will drive down prices. And these guys that are paying the extra 17 mils, you know, they may feel some pain, because that's what drives down prices. Mm-hmm. Is competition, more housing. And the way we do that is eminent domain. We have a lot of non-performing real estate in all of these cities.
And that was the gist. That was the gist of the Supreme Court argument that caused David Souter to resign from the Supreme Court, was when the Supreme Court ruled that a city can use eminent domain to take, in this case it was commercial property, but presumably it would apply to residential as well, to take it away from Corporation A and give it to Corporation B, because Corporation B was going to run it better in a way that would generate more tax revenue for the city. So, you know, they...
Well, I'm talking about the public good.
No, I agree.
And they can take property for the public good.
Yeah, and the Supreme Court in that decision expanded the power of eminent domain to do that. I mean, that public good was the whole rationale for the decision. I'm sorry I'm not remembering the name of the decision, but I remember when it happened. Nancy, thank you. I'm with you. And I didn't know about the 17 mils. That's real interesting. That would be one way to do it, would be not just with zoning, but also through taxation. Because there has to be a point at which the big corporations say, wait a minute, we've got to pay an additional 10% in property taxes? Nah, we just won't come into this community.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.